in the name of God, who from the very beginning was, who in the end and even after it will still be, who is this very moment, is and truly present. In the name of this God, amen. What remarkable readings. Daniel's apocalyptic visions, speaking of the Son of Man who's given dominion, through to the beginning of John's apocalyptic revelation, and the Alpha and the Omega, best understood with the image of a lamb. And then Jesus in front of Pilate at that most excruciating moment of one way or another, and who, like a lamb, silently stands before Pilate and says an incredible thing. I have been born for this, to bear witness to the truth. You belong to the truth. Listen carefully to me. Those readings are really, really important in the week that we've just had. We're after Paris, we're after Beirut, we're after some other African city that I can't even remember or know. I can't even say the name because I don't know it. But that's a world in which we live. That's where these readings have their context today. And my starting point then is a little boy who goes to Radford College, who after his year four class filed out of chapel, and we touched on some of the things that have taken place this week, didn't move, his shoulders were heavy, and his beautiful soft face, dark hair and forested eyebrow just looked and simply said, I'm just really sad. A beautiful young little boy, conscious of what is going on in the world and allowing himself to feel sad. You may or may not have seen an interview that was posted on YouTube, which this image here is a part of that interview. It's the day after what took place in Paris. And in a way, we shouldn't be here. We've intruded into a father and son's conversation. The father had obviously taken care to come to a place to stand in solidarity with a people and a city and a world who dares to disagree that this is okay. And the conversation proceeded like this. The little boy says, "Bad guys are not very nice." That's him on the left there. "And we have to be really careful because we have to change house." The father looks and correct, saying, no, don't worry. We don't need to move out. France is our home. "But there are bad guys, Daddy." "Yes, but there are bad guys everywhere. They have guns. They can shoot us because they're really, really mean, Daddy." "It's okay. They might have guns, but we have flowers." "But flowers don't do anything. Therefore, the dad fills the space. "Of course they do. Look," pointing then to a growing mountain of flowers. "Look, everyone is putting flowers. It's to fight against guns." "Is it to protect?" says the beautiful little boy. The father replies, "Exactly. And the candles too? Is to remember the people who are gone yesterday. The flowers and the candles are here to protect us." And then there's this most extraordinary moment where the little boy turns to his right to look at the mountain, turns to his father, turns to his right, and then this look, which is a priceless, priceless look, which we're privileged to be able to look into. And then, unfortunately, the interviewer asks a really dumb question. "Do you feel better now?" I think a better question could be something like, "No question at all," to leave it And then maybe ask a harder question to the Father. Is what you've just said real, Father? That's a harder question, isn't it? Flowers, guns, is what you've said real? Should that little boy actually believe you? That's my starting point today. I'd like to share with you some words that I shared with Year 12 students just 8 days ago at their last chapel, their final chapel. And it's about belief. And I offer three things that are not especially spiritual or even religious. The first is this. Belief is necessary. It just actually is necessary. If you want to give up smoking or create a new habit or embark upon a humble little endeavor or try your hand at something, be it music or a job or work, or you actually have to believe. So it's not a spiritual thing, it's just a necessary thing. You have to believe. We just learnt this week that Postecoglou believes that the Socceroos can win the next World Cup. He's being paid to believe that. He needs to believe that. I'll come back to that in a moment. Henry Ford said this, but it actually is thousands of years old. And the sentiment is this: whether you believe you can or you can't, you're right. Belief is necessary. It's just necessary. Second thing is that belief needs to be lived in your body, in our bodies. It needs to be embodied. Or another really beautiful word would be, it needs to be practiced. You have to practice it. So you can believe that it's really important to exercise and eat well. But if you don't actually practice it, you don't believe it. It's not actually taken root in your body. Stephen Fry talks about, he's an incredibly intellectual, bright, extraordinary human being and an atheist. He describes the most important belief that should overwhelm the world is that there is no afterlife. Now, there's two reasons he says that. Is that belief is necessary. It's just necessary. And that because belief actually should be intimately engaged with your body, this is most important. Because if you believe there is no afterlife, you are fundamentally responsible for your life, for its fullness, and accountable then to its moral, ethical obligations. Don't get out of jail free at the end by creating another belief, is what he's saying. I simply hold that up to you, that belief is necessary and it actually does need to be acted out in our bodies. Here on Christ the King, there's any readings that we could turn to, include, of course, the ones from today. But to make that point real, in Matthew 25, the parable, after all the extraordinary parables of grace and in the context of grace, comes a parable of judgment where the King, the Son of Man, stands in front of all and observes how one's belief might have been acted out in one's body and simply holds up the hungry, the thirsty, the sick, the naked, the stranger, the imprisoned, and simply observes. How is it that your beliefs have resonated with your actions, your practice? The third thing is that a belief is extraordinarily powerful, powerful enough to create reality. Powerful. So belief is sufficiently powerful to create reality. And there's a myriad of examples. The placebo effect, an incredible scientific truth that it doesn't actually matter what pill you take, so long as you believe that that pill is actually the thing that will heal your swelling or your pain. It is incredibly powerful. The placebo effect is real. The reverse placebo effect is real too, by the way. If you believe that the sugar pill is actually poison, you will actually become unwell. There's myriads and myriads of stories. You would be aware maybe that amongst Indigenous community of Australia, there is a diabolical proportion of people living with hearing impairment. And accompanying that is a terrible thing called tinnitus. I actually don't know how a person can live with a noise that does not go away. The other extraordinary thing is that in the Indigenous communities, there is an incredible rate of non-complaint about tinnitus. Why? Here's the thesis, that in those communities, that noise is the language of an ancestor speaking well of you. And that creates a reality that means that that noise is not unwelcome. Belief is extraordinarily powerful. It will create realities. We've been witness again and again and again and again that a person can actually create a sufficient belief reality so as to go into a place with such wicked evil intent as to inflict merciless harm upon other human beings and welcome and embrace a similar death themselves. Whatever is their belief system, and it's not religious, but belief is sufficiently power to create that reality. So the flip side to this little comment about belief is that, and you're already aware of this, is that belief can create a reality that has no correlation whatsoever with things as they actually are. Belief can create realities that have no correlation to reality as it is. Postecoglou believes the Socceroos can win the World Cup. But it's necessary for him to do that because it shapes then the way that team train and play. So, beautiful people of Holy Covenant, what is our relationship with belief and reality? Are we here because we're happy with the world that we've created? And does that world bear any resemblance to things as they truly are? I dare then to offer two statements about reality, which you're invited to test. So the first thing, a statement about reality. The first is this, that the world, the universe, has a unity that can be experienced. There is a unity to the universe. Take it the tiniest atom, and you'll know it's mostly nothing, that its tiny elements are held together by the way in which they relate to each other. And that's the fundamental principle of the whole universe. It is mostly nothing, but it's the way they relate that it's held together. And that literally is the material world. Everything is connected. That's an epistemological statement, as it might be an ecological statement, as it might be a statement through physics or everything is connected and related. And the starting point then is that reality is fundamentally relational. Experience it, test it. The heart of reality is relationships. Whether you're an atom or a part of the garden or a human being. Second statement about reality, test this. Test this. At the heart of the universe is self-gift. At the heart of the universe is self-gift. That is, there is no galaxy without the energy of a star that expends itself at its very beginning. Or in the animal world, that relentless cycle of life is only possible because one thing gives its substance to another for it then to continue. Or more beautifully, when a mother holds a young child months old, you've experienced this, haven't you? Everything of the substance of that child comes literally from the mother. There is no life without that literal self-donation into the other. It's an extraordinary privilege to be in an environment where you can watch and be a part of a community where a teacher will gladly and willingly give everything to those in their care. So there is self-gift in the art of teaching, but you will notice then also, isn't it, that the student themselves will do no learning unless they themselves give themselves over to the teacher, to the subject. There is no learning without self-gift. There is no meaning, there is no relating without self-gift. I'm not saying this. I'm simply saying at the heart of the universe, there is a unity fundamentally around relating, and that self-gift lies at the heart of the universe. These are not spiritual or religious statements. So then we come to Christ. We come to Jesus Christ. And now you and I then can do some synthesis. Here, Jesus Christ bears witness to the truth. Those two words are really beautiful. Bear witness in Greek is the same word from which we in English get martyr. To bear witness is actually to take in your body the thing which is, and without words, declare how real it is, how it can be trusted. Jesus, at the cusp of his own crucifixion, stands to bear witness to truth. And the word for truth is a beautiful, beautiful word, which means that which cannot be hidden. So the translation for truth is probably better understood as reality. Jesus is bearing witness, being the martyr for reality, that which cannot be hidden. The irony, isn't it, is that Jesus actually has to come and show what can't be hidden. Jesus reveals what can't be hidden. So we are blind, we are not able to see things as they are. Jesus bears witness to this. And so out of the extraordinary apocalyptic of Daniel is the Son of Man, who in the end is testified as the one who has the dominion and power, who as the Lamb is given in donation. Here, that you and I could be formed into this reality, formed into this truth. The statement of the universe in its unity, in its relationship, ultimately is a statement in our church about the nature of God, who is communion. That's the name of God, Trinity. The ultimate reality is our birth into the reality from which we've come from the beginning of the foundation of all things. And that self-gift at the heart and the foundation of the universe itself is Jesus Christ. And he bears witness to the elemental understandings of how the universe itself was conceived and created in the beginning and will be held together forever and ever. So, ladies and gentlemen, if we remove Christ from the Christian church, what are we left with? We will be left with something that is irrelevant, bears no resemblance to reality, that is punitive, judgmental, self-righteous. And the truth is, Christ, the King who rules, will rule with or without the church. Christ rules and will do so, is doing so, with or without the church. Our invitation is to pay attention and to be in complete harmony, unity, resonance with Christ, the one who rules. So coming back to this extraordinary image here, is it real? Is what the Father said real? My response would be, it's not the words that are the important thing. The reality of what that father said to that beautiful boy will be borne out in the face of the father, face forward to the son. the reality of what that father has said and that boy is actually giving himself to receive, that child receives this and now believes it, is a function of the father's ability to truly stand in solidarity with the interconnectedness of the world itself and in his own body exemplify self-gift. But to you and I, the invitation is for you and I to stand face forward with Jesus Christ and to not be afraid and to know that from the beginning and after the end and now, Christ rules. Everything is related and draws all the way back to God's very interrelated heart. And from the beginning, it has always been given. And you and I can enter ever more truly into reality as our prayerful spiritual discipline to practice in our bodies what it is to face forward, receive the promise of Jesus. Everything I have is given to you. Everything I have. That this family could remain and always be whole. Be shaped and modeled into my gift, my self-gift, my offering, my solidarity with the biggest things that are. Maybe that's why we're here, ladies and gentlemen, to see clearly the face of Christ. That you and I can go into this world and make visible what is real. You and I are not burdened with the task of making anything real. We can't do that. But to make visible what is already real. Jesus is the reality, and you and I then are able to help make visible what is real. The world needs this. Our homes, our schools, our neighborhoods needs this correlation with things as they really are.